One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey, I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today.
And we're live.
Hello.
How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing great on this Sunday morning.
Yes.
Afternoon.
Sunday morning, rain is calling.
No,
falling. I don't know.
It's sunny and warm.
Yeah.
And I'm pumped.
Well, good. We're going to be talking about some freak falls today.
You freak?
Yeah, exactly.
Freak falls?
It's freak accidents type of episode, but specifically people who had some major falls.
Okay. It sounds like a waterfall.
Yeah. Two of them are.
Okay.
So before we jump in, I wanted to remind you, as normal, to go over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast and check out all of our bonus episodes. We have 39 right now, full-length episodes that our patrons voted on, so they're really good stories, and we're going to be putting out our 40th soon enough. So if you like us, check it out. But anyway, why don't we just jump right in, because we have some falling to do.
A lot of freaks to discuss.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Okay. So first up, we're going to be talking about Annie Edson Taylor. She was an American schoolteacher who on her 63rd birthday became the first person to survive a trip over Niagara Falls in a barrel.
What?
Did you know about her?
Wait, no. So she's been teaching second graders her whole life.
Not quite, but for a portion of her life, she was a schoolteacher, yes.
Right, and at the age of 63, she decides that it is now time to go over Niagara Falls in a barrel.
Yes.
How did she come to that realization?
How did she get there?
How did she get there?
Well, I'll tell you.
Did the second graders, like, she had just had enough?
That's crazy.
You know what I mean?
All right, let me tell you. So, Niagara Falls is a collection of three waterfalls on the border between the U.S. and Canada. Ontario on the Canadian side and New York on the U.S. side. They're on the Niagara River between Lake Erie and Lake Ontario. The falls are Horseshoe Falls, the American Falls, and the Bridal Veil Falls. Sometimes Horseshoe Falls is known as the Canadian Falls, since most of the Horseshoe Falls are on the Canadian side of the border, and it's also the biggest and shaped like a horseshoe, which is where it gets its name. It's probably the image you have in your head when you think of Niagara Falls. Annie Edson Taylor was born on October 24, 1838, in Auburn, New York. She was one of eight children. Her father owned a flour mill and died when she was 12 years old, leaving enough money to provide a comfortable living for the family. During her studies, she met David Taylor. The two were married when Annie was 18 and had a son who sadly died a few days after he was born, and her husband died soon after that. So she had a pretty tragic life. She worked a bunch of jobs and moved around quite a bit, but ended up in Bay City, Michigan. By 1900, Taylor had fallen upon hard times, having been burned out of her home and having lost a lot of money invested with a clergyman, and she claimed to be only 42 years old at the time, suggesting that she could make money more easily if she were younger. So something that she did throughout her life was kind of push her birthday forward a little bit. And by forward, I mean making herself younger, because she believed that if she were younger, she would be able to make money easier. And she believed that she needed to have a lot of money to be able to, like, hold her place in the world. Like, she, I guess, spent a lot of time hanging out with, quote-unquote, cultured and refined people, so she wanted to make a lot of money. Hoping to secure her later years financially, she decided she would be the first person to ride over Niagara Falls in a barrel. She said Niagara Falls was a very popular tourist destination, and thanks to the Pan American Exposition, which was a fair held in the nearby Buffalo, New York, she said the idea came to her like a flash of light. Go over Niagara Falls in a barrel. No one has ever accomplished this feat.
So we're expecting this to bring us great fortune?
Yes, we are. So in her mind, if she was successful, the fame and money that she would make would leave her set for life. She could make money by doing lecture tours, making appearances at the fairs and expositions, and she could write a memoir and sell that. And since the Pan American Exposition was taking place in Buffalo, she felt she would be able to attract a really huge crowd to watch her stunt.
Or death.
Or death. This was an insanely dangerous and pretty stupid thing to do, and she knew if she were going to survive the fall, she would need a very sturdy barrel. She used a custom-made barrel for her trip, constructed of oak and iron, and padded with a mattress. Not only would it keep her safe, but then she could use it as a display for her post-plunge career. She designed it herself, designing it out of paper and twine, and then showing that to Bokanchia Cooperage Company in West Bay City to construct the barrel. Hope I said that right. It was 4.5 feet high and weighed 160 pounds. Inside, there were two metal handholds, a leather strap to keep her in place, and as much padding as they could fit to keep her as cushioned as possible. There was also space for a 200-pound lead weight to be attached to the bottom, that way if it flipped over in the water, the barrel could right itself. The barrel seemed strong enough, but they had to at least test it. So on October 19th, 1901, a few days before she took her plunge, they flung it over the falls with a cat inside named Lagara. The men who recovered the barrel said the cat was shaken up, but unharmed, and it scurried into the bushes when they opened up the barrel, which is super sad. Don't love that they did that.
Poor cat.
Yeah, but it did mean that it was safe enough for Annie.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
There is a picture of Annie posing with her barrel and a cat sitting on the barrel, and it's unclear if that's the cat that they threw over the falls in the barrel or if it's just a random cat.
I would have to imagine not.
I mean, they probably took the picture before they threw the cat over the falls.
Yeah, they would have to. I was going to say, I don't think the cat's getting anywhere near the barrel.
No.
After that.
No, exactly. But there is a picture of Annie, a cat, and her barrel, so we don't know. But at 2 o'clock on October 23rd, 1901, Annie and her barrel were on the dock at Niagara with a bunch of reporters. She had hired a local promoter named Frank M. Russell to make as much hype about her stunt as he possibly could.
Wait, what year is this?
1901.
1901. She's the original influencer?
Yes, she is, I guess.
This is so ridiculous. So I have too much. I can't think of a single thing. Continue.
Okay. He did the job well because thousands of people lined up around Horseshoe Falls to watch her go over. And you would think that this whole thing would be pretty quick because you go over the falls and that doesn't take much time. But Annie was actually stuck in the barrel for over an hour because she was dropped into the water over a mile away from the falls.
Why?
At 3:50 p.m., a boat began towing her, and 15 minutes later, she was detached and left at the mercy of the river. There were a few moments that the barrel got lost in the waves, but for the most part, people were able to keep her in their sight.
Wait, so was this like a publicity move? Because she started so far away, there was enough time for everyone to like watch and get excited?
Probably.
Oh my God.
The whole thing is a publicity stunt.
I know, but I, you know, is that the reason she started so far away?
Maybe. I don't know the true reasoning, but that would make sense. So everyone's watching her in this barrel bounce through the waves, and she went over the falls at 4:23 p.m. on the Canadian side, falling bottom side down. And only a minute later, the barrel appeared at the base of the falls. By 4:40, a team of men had managed to retrieve the barrel. They didn't know if they would be rescuing Annie or recovering her body. They dragged the barrel to a rock and took the lid off. Inside, they found Annie awake. She was bleeding from a cut on her head, and her shoulders were hurt, and she was understandably in shock, but she was alive. Considering what she had just done, she was in pretty good shape. Annie Edson-Taylor was the first person to ever go over the mighty Niagara Falls and survive, and she undoubtedly found the fame that she had been seeking, but it didn't set her up for life as she had hoped. She did okay at first. Newspapers proclaimed her the Queen of the Mist and applauded her bravery. She had also received an offer of marriage because she went over the falls in a bucket or a barrel. She did make some money selling her memoir, making speeches, and giving photo ops, but those only lasted for so long because this whole event, while very shocking, was pretty novelty. Like, once you see it and you hear about it, you're shocked for a minute, and then you're like, okay.
Yeah, no, I imagine experiencing this in 2025 as a reel where I'm like, oh, that's crazy. Oh, she really did that. Oh, she's fine. Okay, scroll to the next. Like, yeah. Next reel.
Right. I mean, that is definitely the 2025 brain rot version where everyone's attention span is 2 seconds, but
I know. But yeah, unsurprisingly not setting her up for life. I was gonna ask, like, how is she actually going to make money from this? But people actually bought her book.
They did.
About a fall.
They did.
How long was the book?
I think it was really short. I think it was like a very small book. I don't know exactly, but
yeah, of course. And then what, speaking to, like, what are you going to speak about?
Her experience. Anyone who's going to tour Niagara Falls, she was basically like, okay, I can stand outside and be like, I'm the Lady of the Mist. You want to hear about my trip over the falls?
I guess, yeah.
But as we know, the public eventually moved on. When her money started to dry up, her manager deserted her and actually took the barrel with him.
That's fucked up.
It is. It is fucked up. And she did use some of the money she had left to hire private investigators to find her barrel, but she didn't have any luck. So she did have a replica made, and she spent her days on the streets of Niagara Falls selling pictures and talking about her trip over the falls, but that wasn't nearly enough money. She later regretted her stunt, saying she would never attempt another journey over the falls, preferring to walk into the mouth of a cannon. She passed away in April 1921. She was poor, and she was buried near the falls. So she did have a pretty tragic life overall, but in the middle there, she did go over Niagara Falls in a barrel.
She had, I mean, this had to be good for a few years at least.
Oh yeah, a couple years.
Where money's coming in, she's the Queen of the Mist.
Yeah.
She's talking to esteemed people, quote unquote.
Sure, right.
Or whatever she wanted. But I feel like my grandparents are parents when I say this, but perhaps there could have been a more productive endeavor to take up for work.
Yeah, probably. But she was looking to make some quick cash. And she did.
She, you know, can we give her flowers here? Because she actually did kind of make something out of something kind of ridiculous.
She did.
Like, this is such a crazy idea. And she was so committed that it kind of worked for a while.
I'm honestly shocked that they were able to, like, seal the barrel well enough that she didn't drown.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess, you know, they figured it out.
Yeah. You know? But that's just shocking to me.
She must not have hit any rocks on the way down.
Exactly. Like, she was very lucky in all of this. But yeah. All she did was have a cut on her head from, I think, from like exiting the barrel. She like hit her head on something and then she got a cut, or I don't know exactly, but it wasn't like, she wasn't like completely shattered in this barrel. Like, she just had a cut.
That's really remarkable.
I know.
Well, I guess, like, what would be the hardest part of this would be this, the impact initially on the top of the water. And if you're just hitting a mattress, like, sure, it doesn't feel good. It's astounding that she didn't break anything. But I mean, after you hit the water, if you survive that, so long as it's waterproof, probably fine. Unless you hit a rock, like, in the initial plunge.
Right.
But
there was a lot that could have gone wrong.
Yeah, I can't. But she was 63, too. It's not like she was a spring chicken.
Right. Right, exactly.
I'm just thinking of the phrase.
No, that's right, I think. But yeah, no, she was in her older years, I guess. Especially, it was 1901, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, how old did people really get to in 1901?
That's a good point. Well, she has her place in history, I guess, you know?
Yeah, she does. She totally does. But on to story number two. We're sticking with Niagara Falls.
Again? Okay.
Yes, we are.
Is this the sequel?
Kind of.
Okay.
I mean, not like someone going over in a barrel. They weren't trying to go over Niagara Falls. They just did.
Oh.
Saturday afternoon, July 9th, 1960, James Honeycutt took 7-year-old Roger Woodward on a boat ride with his 17-year-old sister, Deanne, on the upper Niagara River. They were also at Horseshoe Falls. This was something they had done before, so it was nothing new for them. That was until they got about a mile away from the falls, and the boat's motor malfunctioned, and they got caught up in the current, so they couldn't escape. Frantically, James tried to use oars to row the boat to shore, but the boat was headed straight for the falls. As he frantically fought the current, he yelled for the kids to put on their life jackets. As they approached the edge, the boat hit a rock, capsizing it, sending all three of them into the water. A 7-year-old, a 17-year-old, and James Honeycutt as well, who was an adult. Deanne was separated from her brother and James, but luckily had been pulled out of the water right before she went over the edge by two tourists who were nearby and had seen the boat capsize. James R. Hayes, a truck driver, and an auxiliary police officer from Union, New Jersey, climbed over the rail, stretched out his arm, and pleaded with Deanne, later saying that his pleading voice made her swim harder and she caught his thumb just before going over the falls.
Whoa.
Fearful the current would break his hold on the young girl, he shouted for help, and climbing over the railing, John Quattrochi of Pensgrove, New Jersey, came to the rescue and the two pulled the frightened teenager to safety. James and Roger clung to each other, but were eventually torn away from one another as they went over the edge of the falls. They fell 188 feet, or 57 meters, before they hit the water below. Astoundingly, 7-year-old Roger survived, wearing only a bathing suit and a life jacket. Because of his life jacket, Roger had come right back up after hitting the water, which saved his life. He only had a minor concussion. Luckily, one of the scenic Maid of the Mist boats was just making its turn below the falls when one of the crew spotted the bright orange life jacket as he went over. The veteran, Captain Clifford Keach, maneuvered his boat so the crew could pick up the boy on the starboard side, and after two unsuccessful throws, a life preserver landed within reach of the crying child. He was lifted to safety on board the vessel, and Roger mumbled his concerns about his sister, because he wasn't sure where either his sister or James were. Roger was rushed to the Greater Niagara General Hospital in Niagara Falls, Ontario, where he remained for 3 days with a slight concussion. With only a cut on her hand, Deanne was rushed to the hospital in Niagara Falls as well, where she found her brother and learned about his miraculous fall. James Honeycutt sadly died since he didn't have enough time to fight the current and put on his life jacket, which really is sad. But Roger Woodward returned to Niagara Falls, Ontario on the 30th anniversary of the accident and spoke there.
Wow. Yeah, it's so tragic because they were just having like a fun family day.
Yeah, and they'd done it before.
And just some random motor malfunction turned deadly.
Yeah, I don't know who James Honeycutt was to Roger and Deanne. I don't think it was their father. Maybe it was like a family friend or something, or an uncle. Huh. But they had done it before.
Well, I guess if I were James Honeycutt, you know, if one of them's got to go, it's going to be me.
Sure.
So.
And he was... The reason he didn't survive, or the reason he wasn't able to put on his life jacket, was because he was frantically trying to fight the current, and then he fell into the water before he had a chance to put on his life jacket. So, yeah, I mean, the only reason Roger survived was because of his life jacket, but I can't imagine. First of all, you're 7 years old. You're so tiny. You go over the biggest of Niagara Falls in a life jacket and a bathing suit. That's it. The fact that he made it out with just a minor concussion is insane.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, it's just hard to believe. He must not have hit anything.
No, exactly. Yeah, his life jacket just pulled him to the surface.
And I wonder if he got the concussion from his life jacket. Like, what else would you hit your head on if he went in feet first? I'm sure the water, like, stopped the life vest and smacked him in the face on the way down.
Well, we don't know if he went in feet first or if he went in head first, but he was pulled back to the surface. So it's possible that the hit on the water is what gave him the concussion.
Oh, he, like, went head first?
Could have.
Wild.
But he was a tiny child, so it's not like he was, you know, very heavy. It was going to pull him down super far into the water, and then the life jacket just popped him right back up. So it probably was the contact with the water that did it.
Hmm.
But anyway, that's where that story comes to an end. It's just unbelievable. Because, I mean, it's one thing, I feel like, to go over the falls intentionally in a barrel padded with a mattress. And it's a whole other thing.
Yeah, that you sent a cat over first.
Right. It's a whole other thing to fall out of a boat and just be in a life jacket and go over. And you're
the old-fashioned way, if you will.
No, exactly. But that's that story. Why don't we move on to number three?
Let's do it.
Okay. Next up, we're talking about Temba Kabeka, who escaped London by holding onto the wheel of an airplane for 11 hours.
Okay, I'm listening.
Yeah.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Temba was born in Johannesburg, South Africa. His adoptive mother died when he was 13 or 14, leaving him homeless. And he escaped South Africa to London, as I said, by holding onto a plane for 11 hours. Wheelwell stowaways are individuals who attempt to travel in the landing gear compartment, also known as the wheel bay or undercarriage of an aircraft. Between 1947 and June of 2015, a U.S. Federal Aviation Administration researcher had documented 113 such attempts on 101 flights. Between these 113 people, they were all male and predominantly under the age of 30, and there were 86 deaths, which is a 76% fatality rate, many of which were unidentified. Temba first became homeless in 2009, and every day was a struggle for him. Not only was it difficult for him to figure out where he was going to sleep and what he would eat every day, but it was also incredibly dangerous. Years later, he met a friend, Carlito, on the street, and the two became friends quickly, and Temba even offered him space in the tent where he lived near Tambo Airport. He didn't want to live like that. He had dreams, and he knew he had to do something before he lived his whole life in a tent. He said it was better to die trying. Temba and his friend Carlito came up with a plan to escape their situation. They were going to sneak onto the wheel of a British Airways flight from Johannesburg to London. The plan to reach Europe by air started when Carlito came back one day to their camp with a pile of books on topics such as engineering and aviation. He had an interest in engineering and had a collection of books on the subject, including one on the intricacies of aircrafts. After studying these books, the two men came up with their stowaway idea. While proud of their plans, neither man was aware of the actual danger involved, including the very immediate threat of succumbing to the lack of oxygen. They didn't really think about it because they were both so eager to escape their situation. And one day they decided that this was their last day being homeless. Before leaving their camp, they destroyed everything they owned because they wanted to solidify their plans, and if they destroyed what they had, they couldn't come back to it.
So they just, they gave themselves no other option?
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know. I have to look this up, but I'm pretty sure that the Vikings did this type of shit where they would land somewhere and then they would burn the boats.
Whoa.
So they couldn't go back. It was like, you win or you die.
That's metal.
Dude, but they just did this. I don't know. That's crazy. Certainly motivation.
It is. Yeah. They had nothing else to go back to. So
yeah,
they were going to make it work. They knew they had to be sneaky about it because if they just walked up to the plane and climbed inside, they would be spotted and arrested. But the men did manage to make it to the plane without being spotted. They were both wearing 2 t-shirts, 3 jackets, and 2 pairs of jeans to keep warm while in the air. He and Carlito climbed up into the wheel well on either side of where the wheels would land when they came up as the plane was flying.
Okay, you're going to have to explain this to me. So they're inside the wheel well, so they're going to be just like turning and turning as it takes off?
No. So you know how when a plane takes off, the wheels will come up into the plane and then the wheels are not down as the plane is flying and then they come down when you're landing. So they were in the compartment where the wheels would come up into the plane. So they're like in the body of the plane, but the wheels, once they take off, will come up into the area where they are. Does that make sense?
Oh, okay. So they're in the wheel compartment.
Yes.
Essentially. Okay. Wait, so did they just climb up the wheel into there?
Yeah.
Whoa. How big is it?
Not huge. Temba said he forced himself to squeeze in there and wasn't far from the engine. He could feel it as it rotated. He tethered himself to the plane with an electric cable that he wrapped around his arm. And he wasn't sure how Carlito was situated because he couldn't really see him. When they took off, Temba said he didn't feel fear. He just felt very present. And he said he was glad that the security didn't approach the plane because it took off with no issue and they were inside. Wheelwell stowaways face considerable risk of death during all phases of flight. Some have been unable to remain in the well during takeoff and landing and have fallen to their death. And immediately after takeoff, the landing gear retracts into the wheel wells with the potential to crush the stowaway if they're not in the correct position. If the stowaway is able to avoid physical injury, they still face hypothermia and hypoxia risks at the extremely low temperatures and low atmospheric pressure at high altitudes, as well as hearing damage from prolonged exposure to the dangerously high noise levels outside the cabin. As they took off, Temba recalled seeing houses and cars below because the wheels weren't up yet, so he could see the ground basically as they're taking off. The last thing he remembers from going up was hearing Carlito say, "We made it," but then he passed out from the lack of oxygen. At altitudes above approximately 2,500 meters or 8,000 feet, hypothermia becomes a risk, and the lack of oxygen can very easily make you pass out and probably will make you pass out. At altitudes above 6,000 meters or 20,000 feet, stowaways may also develop decompression sickness and nitrogen gas embolism, which I found really interesting because I feel like you only really hear about decompression sickness when you're talking about like a scuba diver.
Right.
But I guess when you're up in the air in the wheel well of a plane and not inside the cabin where there's, you know, the correct pressure, you can also experience decompression sickness.
Yeah, I guess it's the opposite, right? Yeah. It's like going from regular to like way less pressure instead of way more to regular.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Do you have any problems coming back down with that?
I would assume.
Or is it just going back up?
I think it's dangerous the entire time.
Cool.
I think
it's
really dangerous.
I can't imagine that you can survive outside a plane at 30,000 feet for 11 hours.
It was an 11-hour flight.
Yep. Were they cruising at 30,000 or they
20,
lower?
20,000?
I actually have no idea what the difference would be, but it does seem like maybe it could make a difference, 10,000 feet.
Sure, but temperatures continue to decrease with altitude, and it may drop as low as negative 63 degrees Celsius or negative 81 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wait, so that's past the point where Celsius and Fahrenheit are the same?
Yes.
That's insane. Well, that's a little cold.
It's a little cold.
I have to assume that they weren't that cold. There's no way anyone would have made it through.
Well, they were unconscious, so.
Well, yeah, but that's 11 hours mm-hmm. of negative 63 and negative 81 Fahrenheit.
Mm-hmm. As the plane descends to lower altitudes, a gradual rewarming and reoxygenation occur, If the stowaway does not regain consciousness and mobility by the time the landing gear is lowered during the final approach, or has already died, the body may fall from the aircraft. When the plane was about to land, after 11 hours, Temba fell out of the plane. When the landing gear came out, so did he and Carlito. Temba's next memory was lying on the tarmac at Heathrow, semi-conscious, with a shattered leg. He didn't realize he had fallen out of the plane until he hit the ground. When he woke back up, he saw the plane flying above him and thought to himself, "How did I get out of the plane?" He said, "I could see the guards. They carried me up, and the next thing, I woke up in the hospital." He had sustained burn marks after wrapping his arm through cabling in the wheel well. It was the cabling that actually saved his life, as he managed to remain on board longer while Carlito fell out earlier than him and landed on a building right as the landing gear opened. He spent the next 6 months in the hospital in a coma, and while he was there, police showed him a picture of Carlito to identify his body. He hadn't made it, which Temba took really hard. He considered Carlito his brother. According to the FAA, it is likely that the number of stowaways is higher than records show because bodies have fallen into the ocean or remote areas. Many wheelwell stowaways are found dead or alive with their bodies covered in frost, suggesting severe hypothermia during their flight. Fidel Marui, who survived a wheelwell flight from Tahiti to Los Angeles in 2000, had a body temperature of 26 degrees Celsius or 79 degrees Fahrenheit, well below the level usually considered fatal when emergency personnel began treating him on the runway. It is unknown how survivors did not perish from extreme conditions. A 1996 FAA paper proposed that humans, when placed in an environment that overwhelms the body's ability to control its own temperature, become poikilothermic and enter a state of hibernation that allows the body to temporarily survive in low oxygen environments. So I guess when you're going up into that extreme weather and low oxygen that quickly or something, I don't know, you basically go into hibernation.
That's so remarkable.
Among 99 known cases of wheelwell stowaways from 1947 through 2013, there were 76 fatalities and 23 survivors. Seems like a lot of survivors for something so extreme.
I would expect no one to get through this.
One survivor, Armando Ramirez, who came from Cuba aboard an Iberia flight from Havana to Madrid in 1969, recalled in 2021 that his earliest post-flight memories are of Spanish doctors calling him Mr. Popsicle because ice covered his body when the pilot discovered him after his arrival. He had boarded the plane while it was taxiing, carrying a flashlight, rope, and wool to stuff his ears. A companion fell out of the other wheel well before takeoff, and a third blacked out at the last moment. After takeoff, he had suffered frostbite on his middle finger so severe it turned black while holding onto the wheels, retracted, but then remembered nothing but shaking and shivering from the extreme cold until he lost consciousness. It took him a month in a Spanish hospital to regain his hearing, but he reports no lingering medical issues from the experience.
That is so remarkable. He didn't lose his finger?
I guess not.
Whoa.
It turned black, though, so I don't know how. Maybe he did, but he had no lasting, like, extreme medical issues, so.
Dude, that is so insane.
Today, Temba, who now goes by Justin, lives in London, and he does have some lasting injuries from his fall, but he is alive. He had broken his leg in several places and still uses crutches, but otherwise he's doing well. Doctors believed because of the freezing temperatures, it kept him in a state of quote-unquote suspended animation, which is what kept him alive. So I guess he hit that like hibernation level.
Oh, okay. How far up did he fall out?
He fell out just before they hit the tarmac.
Oh, so like 20 feet?
I don't know exactly how
less
big
than
his
100.
Fall was, but yeah, he survived. He broke his leg in the fall, but that was about it.
But he was going...
Yeah, very
fast.
Fast
a plane was.
Exactly.
Oh my God. I can't believe that. Here we are. He's on crutches and living.
Yes. When the body's core temperature falls to a certain level, the heart, brain, and other critical organs are placed in standby mode, and they don't require nearly as much oxygen to function.
I know. And we know this for the true OGs from what episode was it? The third one?
It was like episode 3 or something.
Don't go back and listen.
Yeah, don't do it.
We were not good yet, but... It has a special place in my heart because it's the first one I told, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like
Anna Bagenholm.
Yeah, Bagenholm.
Bagenholm.
I think.
Excuse me.
Somebody remarked that I got the pronunciation right the first time, so no big deal. But she pretty much died for 4 hours.
Yeah,
but
she was...
because she was under ice in like glacial runoff, it pretty much preserved her organs, and she didn't have any brain damage because she was cold.
Yeah, you got to be warm and dead.
Warm and
dead,
folks.
After a period of homelessness in London, he now lives in a one-bedroom flat in Liverpool and is trying to forge a career in hip-hop. He said, it's easy here. The people are gentle and nice. And that's his story.
How remarkable. I guess we like fixated on the medical miracle of it all, but I just think about how tragic his life was to get him to that point. You know, his mom died and now he's homeless as a teenager for years.
Yeah.
To the point where he feels like this is his only option for a better life.
That's super dark. Yeah, it's really hard to wrap your head around.
Yeah, and then to the point where he destroys all his belongings. Like, that's another detail that, like, hit me.
Yeah, it shows you how serious he was and how desperate.
Yeah, man. Well, I'm glad that, you know, he found a life in Liverpool.
Yeah.
You know, he finally got out of homelessness. It's not easy.
Yeah, there was a guy, I don't know his name, but there was a guy who, I guess, helped him as he was sitting outside of a convenience store, and he like bought him some food or something. And then he went home and he saw on the news or in the paper his face because he had just fallen out of a plane. And he was like, where do I know this guy from? And then he was like, oh my God, that's the guy I just helped. And so he like became friends with him and he helped him get back on his feet. So it's pretty remarkable too for that reason.
Yeah. Wow. Well, God bless that guy. You know, good for Temba.
Yeah. That is Temba's story. On to the next. This is our last story for the episode, but it's a kind of a long one, so buckle up. We're talking about James Michael Grimes, who fell off of a cruise ship.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
James lived in Valley, Alabama, and worked in construction. He was very close with his family. Every year for Thanksgiving and Christmas, the family would get together to celebrate, and in 2022, the family decided to take a cruise from New Orleans to Cozumel, Mexico, through the Gulf of Mexico. On November 22nd, 2022, 2 days before Thanksgiving, James and 17 of his family members, on his mother's side, met up in Alabama and drove 5 hours and 30 minutes to New Orleans. They all got into multiple hotel rooms and got ready to board their cruise the next day. On November 23rd, the family was so excited and arrived at the loading dock hours early and eventually boarded the massive Carnival Valor. As they walked up the ship, James admired the enormity of it. He was ready to party and have a good time with his family. The family made their way to their rooms and reconvened shortly after that to explore the ship. For the first few hours, everything was great. At 8:15 p.m., James joined several of his family members for dinner, which was when they started drinking for the night. Shortly after dinner, he and some of his family went to listen to the live music on board. He saw there was an air guitar competition, which he signed up immediately for, And 2 hours later, around 10:30 p.m., after completely shredding the air guitar, he won the competition and won his prize, which was a free drink.
How lit was he at this point?
I could just imagine you doing this.
Yeah, I was going to say this is up my alley.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, so he gets a free, is it like a shot? You get to do it on stage too, and everyone's like, yeah.
No, I think it was a free beer.
Well, then chug it.
Probably drink of choice, but he chose a beer.
Well, that's fun.
He was feeling good, and he was already a few drinks deep, and high-fived his cousins as he got his free beer. But James had maybe gone a little too hard because he blacked out. A little past midnight, James began regaining consciousness, and he wasn't fully aware of his surroundings yet, but quickly realized something was very wrong. He was extremely cold, and he felt like he were floating, as if he were in a dream. And then he began coughing up water, which was when he sobered up enough to realize that he was no longer on the cruise ship. He had fallen from the ship into the pitch black water, and was now treading water in the middle of the ocean by himself.
But he just passed out over the edge?
No, he kind of, I think, blacked out a little bit, and then ended up falling over the edge. And then regained consciousness, or not consciousness, but like...
memory?
Yeah, memory, as he basically hit the water. That'll sober you up real quick.
Whoa. No shit. Oh my God.
His sister said the last she had seen her brother that night was right before he left the bar to go to the bathroom. And after he didn't come back, she kind of just assumed he went to bed. And then the next day, when he was no longer on the ship, they couldn't find him anywhere. They searched for him, and eventually they reported him missing. James couldn't remember how it happened or the falling part of everything, but it had happened because he was in the middle of the ocean by himself. He searched the darkness for anything to swim toward, like the outline of an island or a light or something. He noticed he couldn't hear out of his left ear. He thought about how far he must have fallen and realized it was probably from the sixth floor of the ship, which would have been a very far fall. He thought to himself that couldn't have been where he fell from because he thought he'd be dead.
Oh, and on top of it all, he's hungover.
Yeah, dehydrated. He wondered where the ship even was, and then he spotted some lights off in the distance and began swimming toward it, but he couldn't swim fast enough, and soon he was left in total darkness. In the darkness, he began stripping off most of his heavy clothes in the water because he figured it would be easier for him to keep warm without them, and it would be easier for him to swim. He left on his boxers and his shorts. By 3 a.m., James had been treading water for well over 3 hours. He kept telling himself he could do this. He'd always been a good swimmer, but he was swimming aimlessly in the darkness. He didn't even think about what could have been swimming in the water beneath him until he was stung by a jellyfish. At first, he didn't even realize, but as the tentacles began getting stuck around his leg and even up to his neck, he definitely felt it.
Oh.
He was able to peel off the jellyfish and continue swimming in the direction the lights had been. By 6 a.m., James was still going. He had been in the freezing water for well over 6 hours, and at that point, the sun was beginning to come up. It was around that time that he saw another light off in the distance. He thought it might be an oil rig, so he began slowly swimming toward it. He didn't want to use too much of his energy. James said drowning had always been his biggest fear, so he told himself that he wouldn't stop swimming. As he swam, he saw large storm clouds beginning to form above him and thought to himself maybe he could outswim the storm if he picked up the pace. Surprisingly, he felt better swimming faster than he did slowly. But suddenly, the waves he was swimming through became massive, and before he knew it, he was being pushed off course, and the lights he had spotted in the distance were gone. By 10:15, James had been in the water for 10 hours. He kept his thoughts of his daughter in his mind to give him strength. He thought to himself he was going to meet God soon. Minutes later, he spotted more lights off in the distance, and knowing he may not have another chance at rescue, he swam toward them as hard and fast as he could. This time he was able to get close enough to see that it was an oil rig. But just as it began coming into view, the waves picked back up once again, and the current pushed him back out to sea. The three lights got smaller and smaller until they were gone altogether, and there was nothing he could do about it. A little past 12 p.m., James had been in the water for 13 hours. After another hour of floating, he saw a fin about 15 feet away from him that looked like it was headed straight toward him, and then he felt something large brush his leg. Fear ran through his body, expecting the worst. Whatever it was, he could see that it was enormous and had a large, flat head. He took a large breath and dunked his head under the water. He kicked whatever it was and flailed his arms under the water, attempting to scare whatever it was away. And surprisingly, it seemed to work.
Wow. Well, I mean, sharks usually go after the easy meal, right?
Yeah, he kicked it. So you
kick it in the face, might think twice.
Yeah. Unfortunately, after that, he ran into more jellyfish. It was a jellyfish patch.
Oh my God.
Able to peel them off his body once again. And as another hour went by, James was feeling the full effect of the sun beating down on him and the hunger beginning to creep in. Also, keep in mind, as you mentioned, he's hungover.
Well, I'm sure the adrenaline is maybe making up for that.
Right, but he's definitely more dehydrated than he should be.
Oh, yeah.
I cannot imagine treading water for that long at all, period, end of sentence, but with a hangover? Oh, my God.
I mean, there's so many things working against him. He, like, went through a storm.
Yeah.
He's probably sunburnt now.
He must have been a really good swimmer, because I don't know how any person could tread that long.
Well, you have to float for part of it.
Sure, but, like, without a life jacket.
I don't know. I can't do that.
Woof. His mind began wandering, and he thought about just giving up and letting the waves take him down. But then he saw a small tree branch floating nearby. And he swam toward it and grabbed on and actually began trying to eat it. He was hungry enough to think to himself the taste wasn't even that bad. By 3 p.m., James had been lost at sea for 15 hours. He was becoming severely dehydrated, especially because he had started this whole ordeal drunk. He was so thirsty, he began trying to quench his thirst with the seawater around him.
Yep, this is not a good idea.
Yeah, after only a few gulps, it came back up, which was probably better for him in the long run. He knew he couldn't keep this up for much longer. Suddenly, almost out of nowhere, a cruise ship was passing by him about a half mile away. He tried desperately to get somebody's attention on board, but he was so small out there, and this was just some random ship, so they weren't looking for him. And eventually, it disappeared into the horizon. By 8 p.m., James had been in the ocean for 20 straight hours. He contemplated giving up once again, but then thought of his daughter. He figured he had a little more in him, so he would just keep going as long as he could. Not long after that, James spotted another ship. This time, it was a cargo ship. Feeling like this was truly his last chance at survival, he gathered whatever he had left in him and swam over to it. He got as close as possible. So close, he even saw the outlines of people on the deck. He began screaming for help as loud as he could and waving his arms, hoping to get spotted. And he heard a voice call back out to him, "Where are you?" And James screamed, "In the water." Several people gathered by the rail, and suddenly multiple life rings were tossed in the water for him. The rings weren't close enough, and the waves kept pushing him away, so the men yelled for him to hang on for the next 15 minutes. The Coast Guard had been searching for him, and they were already on their way. After a few minutes, a helicopter was overhead and circled the ship to find James's body. Suddenly, the spotlight shone down on him, and he heard a voice from above shout, "We've got him." A rescuer swam to James and put him in the basket that airlifted him into the helicopter. The Jayhawk aircrew hoisted him into the helicopter and transferred him to the awaiting emergency medical services at the New Orleans Lakefront Airport. It was 8:30 p.m. on November 24th, Thanksgiving Day, when James was finally pulled from the water.
So 20 hours?
Mm-hmm.
Without a life jacket.
Yeah.
Hungover.
Mm-hmm. What are you thankful for, James?
Yeah.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Seriously. He ate wood.
He did.
Can you do that?
He tried.
Well.
Due to poor weather, the helicopter was forced to land at the New Orleans airport, and then an ambulance raced him to the nearest hospital. And first responders were stunned at how lucky James had been to be spotted, especially since it was nighttime, and they were amazed that he lasted that long in the ocean without a life jacket. James spent the next 5 days in the ICU, but ended up totally fine. He said, I figured after spending about 6 hours, I might as well make it another six, and then another six. I think my will to live was strong enough to save me. I believed I had about 2 more hours in the ocean before I went under.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, this is kind of what the show is all about, but it's just like, I'm still amazed by the capacity that people have when it's life or death.
Yeah.
Like this. And especially when they have some like really serious reason to live, mm-hmm. like for his daughter, you know, was the, it for him. It's just like, can you imagine trying to tread water for 5 minutes?
No. I mean, for 5 minutes, maybe.
Yeah. But... Well, it's just like, okay, 15, 30, an hour.
Yeah.
Like at what point does it seem crazy to you? I bet it's like ages before 20.
Oh my God. Yeah. I said no to your 5 minutes, like, so right. immediate.
Right.
Like, no.
Well,
no,
I mean, I think, like, 5 minutes would, I mean, in a life or death situation, wouldn't be that difficult, but, you know.
I have tread water for 5 minutes.
Right.
But,
it, but like, in a regular situation, like, half an hour would be pretty damn taxing.
No, you definitely start to feel it. Like, it is not an easy thing to do mm-hmm. for an extended period of time, and he did it for 20 hours. Also, I... can't believe his biggest fear. I mean, I can't believe it, but his biggest fear was drowning, and he was stuck in the ocean for 20 hours.
Yeah, and a shark was checking him out.
Yeah, and jellyfish twice, and a storm. We can't forget the storm.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people don't survive storms in the middle of the ocean in boats.
Yeah. So, yeah, I hope you hug your daughter a little tighter.
Yeah, and his whole family. Yeah. I mean, you're literally his whole family was on board. Like,
oh my God,
all of them basically
ruined. Vacation ruined.
Well, yeah, but also it's pretty great that he lived and he was totally fine. Like,
yeah, that's remarkable too. No permanent damage. Well, I think that they maybe will have the next vacation on land.
Probably. Yeah, I think I would probably take a break from cruise ships had that happen to me.
Yeah. Well, that is a freak accident that turned into an all-out battle that he won.
Yeah, seriously. But also I'm surprised that I feel, because I've heard stories about people falling off cruise ships, and it's not uncommon, I feel like, to have like the engine or whatever suck you just under the ship and then you're just immediately dead. Like that happens
fall
too.
Off in the wrong place.
And then also, have you seen videos of people like dropping food into the water from a cruise ship and all the fish that just immediately swim like toward it and eat it? Crazy. Like also sharks. Like I'm pretty sure cruise ships, like when there are cruise ships, like there's a lot of stuff underneath it because they know that like food falls off and they can like very quickly get to it. So
yeah, didn't think about that one. Well, at least there's no piranhas.
Right.
In the ocean.
I guess it was like probably the area he was in. Also, I don't know if that happens all the time everywhere, but it would make sense. Like,
yeah,
you're in the ocean. It's where they live.
Yeah, I think this is further solidifying that I am not a cruise guy. I'm a riverboat guy.
Sure.
I'm a lake guy.
Yeah.
Not the ocean.
Yeah. I have been on a handful of cruises and they are nice, but they all also are kind of creepy to me personally.
Yeah.
But also I host a podcast where I talk about the worst case scenarios. So, you know, I'm not really doing myself any favors.
No, we're not. But I do want to be within 5 miles of the land.
Sure. Sure.
You know, but yeah, what a great lineup.
Thanks.
It's truly crazy. Like each and every one was unique and surprising.
I agree.
And I appreciate it.
Well, good. Okay. Well, that's all I really have to say about that. Why don't you tell me your good thing so we can have a palate cleanser?
Well, my good thing is that we recently visited Chicago.
Hey.
With our friend. And we went to the aquarium, which is really cool.
Yes.
And yeah, it was just great to see him and see a little bit of Chicago. Because we hadn't been before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a beautiful city.
It is. It's
it really,
really
is.
Really beautiful. It has so much charm. I really, really like it.
Yeah. So I was a huge fan. And then Lake Michigan was also super cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we got caught in a dust storm.
We did.
Which was wild.
That sucked. Yeah. We got a severe weather warning on our phones as we were driving into Chicago. And it was like dust storm. And then we, you know, went out to dinner. And then by the end of the night, I was like, is anyone else's throat like on fire? Like,
yeah.
I feel like I just have so much dirt and dust in my throat, which sucked. But now, you know, a day or so later, it's okay. But
yeah, but the next day, it was just so clear and such a beautiful day. The water was freezing, but it still looked really cool.
Yep.
Yeah, that was a great time. That's my good thing. What's yours?
We just got a big picture of some birds for our bedroom.
I'm looking at it.
And it fits in nicely. And I really love getting a new piece of decor.
I feel like this piece really speaks to who we are.
The birds.
Yeah, because it's like, what would you describe it as? Like cranes?
Yeah, it's a bunch of cranes like walking, but some of them are kind of silly looking. I feel like it does fit our vibe.
Yeah, because I'm a bird.
You have very bird energy.
In terms of vibes.
Yeah, and, I do think so. And like birds are really silly and kind of like weird.
Yeah.
And every time I see a video of a bird doing something, I'm like, is that you?
Yeah. No, at the aquarium, they had some birds, and I was like, this is a cheeky lad, and I relate to him.
A cheeky lad. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. But yeah, that's my good thing. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this one. We enjoyed talking about it. If you would like to get access to a bunch of bonus episodes and so many more in the future, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. We post pictures of all the stories we talk about over on Instagram at nottoday_podcast. You can also find the link to our merch shop in our Instagram bio. If you or anyone who knows a story of survival that you'd like to share with us or possibly hear on an upcoming listeners episode, send it to nottodaypodcast@gmail.com. We have a TikTok that is nottodaypodcast and a Twitter that is nottodaypodcast with a T on the end of podcast. Stay 3.
Because that makes sense.
And just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.